You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Are there any topics that keep you up at night? As another AI company announces plans for an artificial pet, do you ever worry about robots taking over the world? Or what might really happen if we release aerosols into the atmosphere? Well, journalist Ben Bradford, he has.
I've been keeping a list of things that could end the world. From practical,
climate change, pandemics, nuclear weapons,
the galactic,
stuff still hits planets,
and others.
If you can engineer a mosquito so it can't spread disease, you could engineer a mosquito so it always spreads disease.
The list has 141 entries.
I don't like where this is headed.
I don't like where it's headed either. Well, he just released a podcast exploring some of the things that made his list, from nuclear war to super volcanoes.
Why is the Earth doing this to us?
It had a violent birth.
Picturing kind of like a mosquito Jurassic Park. Maybe that's not right.
No, that is pretty much right.
If we can sort out the threats we actually face, we also might figure out what to do.
I know it sometimes doesn't seem like it, but people are smart.
I will say, I've already been surprised at the level of hope I'm finding in the darkness.
None of this is inevitable.
If we manage to avoid the collapse of this civilization, the future's looking good.
Are We Doomed is a provocative question and the title of the new podcast series from Ben Bradford, an award-winning public radio journalist and the founder of Nuanced Tales, who once graced the airwaves on Marketplace as well as a government reporter here at CAP Radio. He joins us today with his latest podcast series. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
So Are We Doomed is a pretty ominous title, but yet, listen to your trailer, there is some hope at the end of all of this. How did all of this begin? What is the premise behind this new podcast series?
Yeah, I think there's sort of two things. One is I think that there's sort of a general feeling of bleakness that's pretty pervasive in the country, a sense of things falling apart. And I was interested in exploring that and seeing, you know, what's real, what might be, you know, hype that's sort of, you know, delivered to us algorithmically in our internet age. And the other part of it was that, you know, I'd been doing a lot of political history reporting previously, and that was sort of how did we get to sort of our current paradigm, to where we are, shape a lot of the events that we're seeing today. And then it became kind of this question of, where are we going next?
So what is the style of this podcast? So maybe you hone in on some of these existential threats. You know, how did you want to involve storytelling and research into this series?
Yeah, I mean, you know, my background, obviously, from Capital Public Radio and before and after, has been as a public radio reporter. And a thing that we really love is using audio, not just using voices, but being able to use it for all these sort of other wonderful aspects of it, for storytelling. So that's the use of sound. That's the use of music. That's being able to, yes, tell you a story in a way that I think is really sort of fun. So I wanted to do all those things. But there's sort of a kind of a mechanical challenge in podcasting right now, which is like, how do you do that in a way that's sustainable? And so we landed on sort of this hybrid. So what the episodes, you know, sound like is there's sort of an interview or two interviews, sometimes three interviews that are at the core of them. And then around them is, and in between them is storytelling and sound. And then of course, like, yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of this stuff is really serious and is really dire when you're looking at like nuclear war, for instance, you know, that's like pretty scary. And so there's like also this question of just, how do you do it in a way where you just don't feel so depressed? And I think that the only thing you can do is sort of like find the humor in it, find the curiosity in it. And so all of that is sort of this blend of like trying to bring good reporting and like tell you things that you don't know about these sort of things. And at the same time, do it in a way where we have fun. And I think the early sort of reviews on that are that we are sort of striking that balance.
Yeah. Make those anxious thoughts a little bit of fun and giving yourself more information. So, you know, maybe they don't seem as scary. When you were doing your research, were you able to kind of like hone in on like the top like three or four like biggest existential threats and risks in our society today?
There are a lot of institutions that sort of measure what they call existential risk, or sometimes they call it global catastrophic risk. And these are sort of the you know, academic terms for end of the world stuff. And there's sort of four that typically are on those lists. And these are at places from like, you know, Cambridge or the Rand Corporation, or sometimes even, you know, internally at governments. And so those four are commonly nuclear war, climate change, pandemics. And the final one that is sort of new is that AI keeps cropping up on these lists.
I mean, there are movies out there, you know, where robots take over the world. I mean, we went through a pandemic, or there's just apocalyptic movies. I guess, what does pop culture and this obsession over it get wrong about these risks and these threats?
I love this question, and it's absolutely something we've been exploring. And so we have two episodes that are going to come out. One of them is in a couple of weeks here, that look at sort of like different slices of that question. And so that first one is looking at, you know, what would it really be to survive nuclear war, or to experience nuclear war? And we sort of look at sort of your Mad Max scenarios, the post-apocalyptic wasteland, and, you know, the even just sort of the diving into a fallout shelter and how long are you down there? And even in sort of the worst projections of a fallout shelter, they're never designed for more than 2 weeks maximum, which is sort of interesting and very different from sort of the, you know, we've been down there for 50 years or 200 years or, you know, whatever. And so we sort of like look at the course of it. And I'll just say, I mean, it's very bad. It's very unpleasant. Like, we do not want to do this. And I think that's sort of like the ultimate takeaway. It's like more people should realize just like how badly we don't want to do this. And maybe that sounds obvious, but I think like when you hear this sort of realistic, gritty experience of it. We have this great guest and his sort of depiction of what it is to be down in a shelter of some kind for that amount of time is like, you're talking about like the toilet situation down there, and it's not good. So, you know, there's that sort of a thing that I think is really interesting. Later on, we have sort of an exploration of just like, what do people do in major disasters when societies fall apart? And of course, we have examples of this from history and we can look back. And there's sort of a lovely aspect, like, again, not one that I'm rooting for. Like, I don't think we should do that. But it's this idea that people do not retreat into their bunkers. They do not find each other to be the enemy. Typically, what is required after a disaster, or even sort of an apocalyptic level disaster, is coming together.
I think about people who are survivalists, you know, and the fact that, you know, hunting and gathering, you know, as one strategy. Is that a viable one?
As far as we can tell, it would be very difficult for that to be viable over any kind of long term, because there's just we have an anthropologist on who is also a wilderness survival guide for that episode. And, you know, he sort of walks you through the math of it. And the basic idea is there's really not going to be enough food in those sorts of scenarios to just do hunting and gathering. And one of the things that's really fun about that I've encountered, actually, and was a very big surprise to me in other episodes as well, as we've like researched other topics, is just how historically why humans turned to farming. And we didn't turn to farming because it was like a more pleasant experience than hunting and gathering. Hunting and gathering took less time for the people doing it to get their needs fulfilled. And farming is obviously very, very hard, particularly subsistence farming was really hard. But it was just because that's what was needed to support the number of people in these communities across the world.
Wow. On your, I guess, expedition of doom, what was the most fun expedition that you went on and learned about?
Okay. So I should say, first of all, this is like still ongoing. This is going to be a continuing series. So we're doing it every week. So I'm still in it. And, you know, the way that we cover this extends from, you know, some of these very serious threats to also solutions. I'm working right now on an episode that's related to, like, can we ever get an everything vaccine? You know, can we have it so that you don't just have to get an annual flu shot, because you get a universal flu shot, but even more than that, because you one day get a shot that just, you know, makes it so you are immune from most of the diseases that we know about. And that's sort of an interesting question. You know, I don't know what the ultimate answer is yet, but there's certainly work being done for universal vaccines. I'm doing one about the moon. You know, we've had a lot of going back to the moon. We're losing the moon very slowly, a couple centimeters a year. It's existentially not a problem, because by the time we lose the moon, the sun will have already exploded and consumed the Earth and the moon. But it's interesting to sort of look at, you know, what the moon does for us. And again, speaking of pop culture, we do have sort of this pop culture obsession with blowing up the moon or things happening to the moon. So those are really interesting. I think that the one that really kind of got me, we just did this recently, was about cyborgs. I was literally like, wow, what would be a whimsical episode? Because a lot of these are very serious about climate change or, you know, nuclear war or, you know, what have you. And I was like, cyborgs, they're all over science fiction. Where are they? And then we did the episode and it was like, oh, actually, this like is ridiculous, but can kind of see how we get from here to there. And then you like look at sort of like military research into cyborgs, which is real. There's a report from the Army in 2019 called Cyborg Soldier 2050, to give you a sense. And there's all kinds of, anyway, so that is absolutely one that was just a total rabbit hole for me.
When listening to your trailer, the one that made my skin crawl were mosquitoes. And so what did you learn about that? I mean, mosquitoes love me, so. That was like the one that really just bubbled up to the top.
Well, I think you'll like that episode. That's coming out next week. And it is because we're looking at whether we should get rid of the mosquito. And when you dig down into it, there are serious proposals that, you know, folks may have heard about to not so much to get rid of the mosquito entirely. So sorry, Vicky, you're still going to get bit. But to do a type of gene editing that can spread among mosquitoes. So you get rid of them in certain areas for long enough that you can remove diseases. So you could eliminate malaria is the idea, right? And mosquitoes are the greatest killer of humans of any creature in history. And so we're looking at sort of the idea of should you do it and sort of the ethical questions behind that. And if you do that, also, where do you stop, right? What other species is it like, well, we could really make the world more convenient by doing this, but also, you know, how much nature do we want to engineer? All of which I think are sort of like interesting, big existential questions.
Another topic that just seems fascinating to dive into are super volcanoes. And we have one here in California.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So super volcanoes are essentially on this kind of scale of how big has the eruption been in the past. They are this level of apocalyptic eruption that we haven't seen in all of recorded human history, but that we know that like planet Earth has done from time to time in the past. I think there are actually two, but the sort of the big one of super volcanoes in California is the Long Valley caldera. And that last erupted about 100,000 years ago. It's over in Mammoth. There's still hot springs there. So if you go and you're like, you know, going to a hot spring, it's like, yeah, well, you're probably on top of that. It is used for a power plant, a geothermal plant, the Casa Diablo plant. The headline, and we get to this 2 minutes into this thing, is like, we're good. We're fine. And the most famous one in the U.S. is Yellowstone. There are all kinds of conspiracy theories that, you know, Yellowstone is going to explode. And you can hear sort of this investigation into, like, why it's not. And I actually loved that. And I think it's, like, really fascinating. It's one you can sort of be like, phew, okay, we're good. But also learn something really pretty amazing about the Earth and other kinds of volcanoes, actually, that are sort of probably more of a concern that we should deal with, but not an existential one.
Yeah. I mean, I just think about like Dante's Peak or movies, you know, that capture this. And you do dive into some like real legitimate threats. There's a lot of conversation surrounding AI. There's also the real concern of nuclear war, which is probably on a lot of people's minds, given the war in the Middle East. What did you learn about the risks associated with nuclear war?
You know, I think that it's made me interrogate my own assumptions. And I think you can kind of hear that in our first episode where we're exploring what are the pathways through which nuclear war starts. I mean, sort of the way that we look at it is it's like, why is nuclear war plausible when essentially everybody who can start it knows that they're risking ending the world? And that's the really basic equation at the heart of nuclear war. And so we're sort of like exploring how do those actually start? What are your ways? And you can really break them down into two ways. One is that someone's just like, I'm doing it anyway, which we label the quote unquote screw it. And then there's the oopsie, right? The oopsie is somebody accidentally fires. And we have a lot of examples through history of like what were called close calls, partway events where we went part of the way to nuclear war. And we look at how those start and we look at sort of the scenario. OK, well, how does that then result into this cascade of escalation? And it is like scary, but also sort of humiliating for our species if we were to do this, which again is, I think, you know, worth considering. But also here's some really interesting ideas that I had never considered about, you know, what is the path forward? We have these weapons and what do we do? And we're going to have more explorations of that in the future as well. In fact, we have one already that we're, it's a future episode with a former defense official, high level at the Pentagon, who kind of makes the argument for why we have what we have. And it's really interesting.
You know, ending with one that's pretty obscure. I do not know much about it. I just want to learn more from you, of course. Project management?
Yeah.
Is that really,
you know,
is that really a big threat or risk?
I think so. I think it's sort of in some ways the biggest threat because, you know, Michael Lewis wrote a book several years ago called The Fifth Risk, and it was about project management. And the idea was that, you know, you have, for instance, the Department of Energy managing the nuclear stockpile and tracking nuclear weapons around the world. And it really matters who's in charge of that, how seriously they're taking that responsibility, and, you know, are they making good decisions about that? And I think that you can sort of apply that to every risk. AI is a really good example, right? So we see AI on these lists of potential existential threats. Now, it's totally potential. It's theoretical, right? We don't know if AI can, you know, will result in or has the potential the way that like nuclear weapons we think do to cause just devastating harm to humanity. But there are some possible pathways. And then the question becomes, well, what are we doing about it? You know, how are we sort of guiding the development in a way that seems to offer us the best potential and also the most potential to avoid the worst outcomes. Mm-hmm. And I think that that really is project management, right? I mean, that is, in some cases, it's law and policy, but there's also just like the very physical function of how well are you, you know, just keeping things organized and making sure that you're doing what you need to do, that things don't go wrong.
Yeah, so this reporting journey is far from over for you because this is an ongoing series. But just checking into where you're at this point in this project, have you become more or less of a worrier?
I think I would like describe myself as a fairly like pessimistic person generally. But I will say, and I think you heard this a little excerpt there, that I am more hopeful than I was on a lot of these things when I started. And I think that's because one of the things that we do throughout all of these is ask, you know, what's the way out? What are the good decisions that we can make? And you hear answers, you hear solutions, you hear paths forward. And you also hear times in the past that people may have thought that we were in a similar degree of trouble. And obviously we made it through those. And I think that there's a key part of our fear today is about the unknown, right? We haven't solved the problems in front of us. And the problems that felt existential in the past don't feel existential anymore because we got through them one way or another. It doesn't mean we'll get through these ones, but as you explore that, you find more hope.
I really appreciate that because I think of myself when I have like anxiety and have all these anxious thoughts, if it just stays in your head, it gets worse. But if you actually like say it out loud, you talk it through someone who actually knows what they're doing and knows what they're talking about, it can actually like help alleviate that anxiousness and those fears that you have.
I completely agree.
Ben, thanks for stopping by.
Oh, man, thanks for having me.
Ben Bradford is an award-winning public radio journalist and the founder of Nuance Tales. His latest podcast series, Are We Doomed?, is being distributed by NPR. With the first episodes, they've already been released. You can find it wherever you get your podcasts, and we have a link on our Insight page. Still ahead, nearly 1,000 nonprofits across four counties are coming together for 24 hours of fundraising. We'll learn more about Big Day of Giving. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.